Howdy, my name is Zeke. I'm here today with Rick Edelstein. He was CEO and lead developer of Cicada Security Technologies. We're doing the Cicada Security Podcast. And Rick, what are we talking about today?
Well, today we have three things on the list. There's first one's going to be two-factor authentication. Second is going to be human error. And third is a great question, which is, what is enough security? The reason I've chose these three topics are based upon what we found in the news this week, which was kind of curious, and a conversation I had with a person who's responsible for developing security practice and policy for a couple of rather significant organizations in this city, and they're all intertwined with each other. The reason why I started talking about authentication is because, essentially, everybody's talking about authentication this week in the press, and it's really quite funny. We take a look at ESET's blog this week, and there's an article by David Hartley, and he's talking about bad password choices. Don't miss the point. And then Naked Security hit a couple of topics on it, which was practical IT, password 101 for business. And they had another one which was following that, which was on security tips before being interviewed on TV, wipe passwords off the whiteboard, which I thought was just plain funny. But it's actually kind of tragic and sad, and I experienced firsthand just in the past few weeks a CEO of a very large organization who had a PC at home that was equipped with various levels of encryption, security, etc. And he didn't use the PC much. Whenever he needed information, he would ask his secretary and she would give him the information. In the meantime, his son wanted a PC that he could do gaming on or whatever, and saw this PC laying around the house and said, "Hey, Dad, can I use this?" He said, "Yeah, but don't do whatever." So the kid goes, turns on the computer, finds out it needs multiple passwords, so he asks his dad, "What are the passwords?" And the kid takes a sticker and sticks it to the front of the computer, putting three passwords to one of the most critical computers in this organization, giving them access to top-level information. And it was when this director went to use the computer, and he notices that there are all these passwords stuck to his computer that he just plucked. I mean, he just realized, okay, this is a problem. This falls into one of the categories of human error. Going back towards the ESET article, we're seeing, the ESET article was talking about pretty much about educating people in best practices, or what he calls people patching. Regardless, I mean, no matter how much you train people, relying on people complying to specific policies and practices is not always the best practice in security, and your security model must always account for the potential for human error. So my feeling is that despite the best intentions of this article, and I'm not saying that training people in security is a bad thing, I'm just saying that security training goes hand in hand with best practices to make sure that human error does not occur.
Yes.
Again, back to the human aspect of all this.
It's the same sort of thing to me, is sort of like looking both ways before you cross the street.
Right.
If you train, there are certain times where I still will not look both ways because I forget, or
right,
I'm talking to somebody, or I'm otherwise occupied. But you know that is the best practice if you don't want to get crushed by a car.
Correct. So Naked Security, again, these are all popping up this week, and everybody's talking about authentication and passwords. And so Naked Security is talking about education and password policies to assure that users change regularly, have specific elements to make sure the password's secure. We can fall back to last week's podcast where we're talking about exponential complexity of passwords as they get longer. So, just to rehash very quickly, there's always been a theory that using passwords with capitals, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and symbols was a good practice and of a specific length. But in the article in the articles we were talking about last week, we found that typically these become very difficult, so people will be more inclined to write these down rather than to keep them for memory,
yep.
Right? So the purpose of last week's podcast was that the statement was that long passwords with easy to remember phrases were a lot easier and more secure ultimately in the long run than using these complex hard to remember codes. So, you know, this is the reason that we were talking about authentication today was it's getting on everybody's mind. It's the first point of access to any system. We were talking about using the cicada as a secondary authentication factor, and that's moving very fast forward right now, and we hope to see integration of that very shortly within the next few days. But what this does is this gives us the ability to now tie a hardware-based device into authentication. So your authentication could be either your username, of course, but then either a biometric or a fixed password. But tied to this is the user cannot get in unless that hardware element is there. So what this does is this stops password sharing. It makes sure that even if somebody were to compromise that password or hack the password, they still won't be able to get in because there's a hardware element that's tied into it. We were looking at, just a few moments ago, you and I were looking at a website for a company called YubiKey that makes a...
YubiKey.
Yeah, the YubiKey, well, the company's YubiKey. They make the YubiKey, which is a hardware-based password system, which comprises actually, they call it cloud-based service. So what we're going to do is we'll purchase one of these and we're going to take a look and see what their implementation looks like so we can understand what they're, how they're doing it. But right now we're partnering with, we're looking at a couple of developments to set up our authentication. One is to work with an existing company that's in the biometric space, and the other one is to code directly into Microsoft. So that's where we're at with that, and that's pretty much it on what we're talking about, two-factor or authentication and two-factor. The human error aspect of it is, you always have to make your systems secure against human error. And then my biggest concern is what is enough security. So, time and again, I'll sit down with decision makers, policy makers, and corporate executives to discuss, you know, how cicada will fit into the, or how cicada could fit into their environment. And one of the discussions I had this week was that, you know, the typical attitude of a CISO will be that if last year we had 2% of our, if the industry average is 2% of all laptop computers will be compromised or stolen in a year, and we're and in our environment only 1.1% of our computers are compromised or stolen, that we're ahead of the curve and we're doing a better than better than required job. And it's a really, it's an interesting perspective because, you know, it basically it says that it leaves a giant gap in your security, whereas if the methods being used right now happened to be that the results were that you were better than the industry, doesn't mean necessarily that the security methods you're using are effective. It just means that those opportunities did not occur.
Yes. That's the sort of thing where the best one would be to have no theft of the computers.
Well, exactly. Yep. But what's really funny is, you know, we're talking to organizations such as government or government-related departments or agencies, and we're talking to financial organizations such as banks. So in the bank environment, it's the Canada Banking Act requires very specific security measures to be put in place and very high metrics for security. And in the government, it's the same type of thing, except that, you know, you have laws that are instead of industry-regulated metrics. But in either case, you know, to say that we're doing an adequate enough job and more security isn't essential is really quite a surprising perspective to take.
It's accepting mediocrity.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing where, to me, it's the sort of thing where you can be either the best or you can do acceptably well.
Right.
And acceptably well, certain people like to, which won't settle for that, but to me, doing the best possible is what should be done at all times.
Right. And so thinking about this, I reflect on a story about a ship called the T.J. Hooper. You ever hear about the T.J. Hooper?
No, haven't heard.
T.J. Hooper was a merchant marine ship off the coast of Boston. And what they happened to be doing is at this one point, they typically moved coal. They shipped coal around. And they were carrying a load of coal. And what happened was there was a large storm that came, and this storm caused the boat to capsize, losing the the owners, well, not the ship owners, but the coal owners, shipment of coal into the bottom of the ocean. And the owner of the coal shipment sued the captain of the boat, T.J. Hooper, because he should have had better protected himself or protected his shipment against peril.
Yeah.
And the captain said, well, this is an act of God. It's weather. I'm not responsible for weather. And the owner of the coal came back and said, well, that is correct, except for one thing, which is that in this day and age, we have maritime radios, which are being more and more commonly used. This was back towards the turn of the century, or earlier part of the century, rather, last century. And it would have been prudent if the T.J. Hooper was equipped with marine radio to know that there was a storm coming in, and if the storm was coming in, it would have moored itself and not picked up our coal, waited out the storm, and then picked up the coal and came in, you know, after the storm. And what happened was the court ruled in favor of the owner of the coal because the T.J. Hooper was aware of common best practices and understood that there was better ways to be able to conduct their business and protect their clients' assets. And because of their neglect, they ended up losing the assets and they were at peril. And that's how I see security. And, you know, when you're managing security in an environment which has zero tolerance for data loss or asset loss or information exposure, and you're aware that there's a better way to do it, but you turn a blind eye to it, ultimately you're assuming a point of liability because you were apprised of what is the best practice. And I'm really kind of surprised when I talk with people to find out that, you know, time and again, the T.J. Hooper comes back to life. People know about better security practices, but
they're settling for second best.
Right, because it's enough in their eyes. It's enough. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have 1.1% asset loss and potential exposure of data, it's better than the industry norm of 2, and therefore I'm good and I'm better than my contemporaries. And that, my friends, is the end of what we have to say today.
Cool. Thank you very much, and we'll speak to you next week.